town of Paradise, which was largely destroyed in a 2018 wildfire that killed as many as 85 people, worried homeowners in Paradise who were just starting to return to normal after surviving the deadliest blaze in U.S. history. And in Washington, a wildfire threatened more than 1,500 homes near Wenatchee, growing to 14 square miles or 36 square kilometers, and crews had little control over it, the Washington State Department of Natural Resources confirmed. Extremely dry conditions and heat waves tied to climate change have swept western United States, making wildfires harder to fight. Climate change has made the region much warmer and drier over the past 30 years and will continue to make weather more extreme and wildfires more frequent and destructive in the future.
This is Foresight. A program on how to worship Allah. Today's tip, dear friends, what are the secrets of enhancing our ubudiyyah, enhancing our servitude of Allah, in the words of the esteemed Imam Khomeini? So, dear listeners, in the past few sessions, we've been talking about the secrets of enhancing our ubudiyyah, enhancing our servitude and our worship of Allah. Interestingly, we are discussing this concept of enhancing ubudiyyah in the words of Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Revolution. So, dear listeners, we find that Imam Khomeini, he writes that the great prophets and the close friends of Allah, the awliya Allah, despite their daily works like other people, they were never on good terms with the world, the dunya, because they worked with Allah and they worked for Allah. Dear friends, what a beautiful and profound statement, which is directly related to ubudiyyah, to the servitude of Allah, and to the worship of Allah. Imam Khomeini says that the great prophets of Allah, and matter of fact, all the prophets of Allah, and those people who are close to Allah, they have a high level and a high rank when it is in the eyes of Allah, as we say, awliya Allah in Arabic. These people did daily works. They worked for a living in one way or the other. We find that despite them working like other people worked for their daily sustenance, they were never on good terms with the materialistic world. For example, we find one of the awliya of Allah, the first Imam, Imam Ali alayhi salam, peace and blessings upon him, the best and most perfect living miracle of the Holy Prophet of Allah, along with, of course, his daughter, Lady Fatimatu Zahra, peace and blessings upon her. We find that Imam Ali, he said that, O world, materialistic world, I divorce you three times from a divorce which no one can return. This is how, dear friends, the awliya of Allah, the prophets of Allah, the imams of Allah, the chosen people of Allah, this is how they were. they weren't attached to the materialistic wealth and the materialistic glamour of this world. And this in itself is a secret of ubudiyya. It is a secret of the servitude of Allah. Of course, either one can be of service to, be in servitude of, and worship either the world, the dunya, the materialistic wealth, materialistic power and wealth and money and greed, or one can be of service to, one can be of servitude to, and one can worship Allah, the master and the creator of all of existence. And very quickly, the last thing that Imam Khomeini says here as regards to our discussion of ubudiyya is that these people, the prophets of Allah, the chosen people of Allah, the close friends of Allah, the special people of Allah, those whom Allah loves and they love Allah, these people, they worked for Allah. They worked with Allah. They worked for the cause of Allah. They helped the cause of Allah. These, dear friends, are the secrets of ubudiyya.
In the name of Allah, assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters in faith who are listening to IRIB English Radio. Welcome to this segment of the program, Foresight. My name is Muhammad, and today I'd like to read to you the English translation of an excerpt from Munajatu Ta'ibin, The Whispered Prayer of the Repenters. Please stay with me. My God, let the cloud of your mercy cast its shadow upon my sins, and send the billow of your clemency flowing over my faults. My God, does the fugitive servant return to anyone other than his master? Or does anyone grant him sanctuary from his master's wrath other than his master himself? My God, if remorse for sins is a repentance, I by your might am one of the remorseful. If praying forgiveness for offenses is an alleviation, I am one of those who pray forgiveness. To you I return that you may be well pleased. My God, through your power over me, turn toward me. Through your clemency toward me, pardon me, and for your knowledge of me, be gentle toward me.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Now, in continuation to what we were talking about, which of course was ubudiyya in the words of Imam Khomeini, we just talked about how the great prophets and the close friends of Allah, that despite their daily work in order to acquire their sustenance and their rizq, we found that they were never on good terms with the materialistic world. Of course, as we said, because when you are in servitude of the materialistic world, then how can you be in servitude of Allah? Imam Khomeini continues and he writes, if you settle your accounts with Allah and take refuge in remembering Allah, you need not fear any creature, as the reckoning and the judgment of creatures is transitory, it is temporary. Well, the reckoning before Allah is eternal. And so, dear friends, here, when we talk about ubudiyya, when we talk about our servitude and our worship of Allah, what a beautiful key here given to us by Imam Khomeini, that we spend so much of our life trying to settle the accounts or settle our accounts, our good and bad deeds, our nice things that we have said, our bad things we have said, our hurting other people's feelings, right? We settle our accounts with people. And interestingly, we live in a day and age where we even settle our accounts with animals. It is amazing and it is unfortunate at the same time that in some cases we are willing to settle our accounts with animals, but we aren't willing to settle our accounts with people. And let alone, we totally forget about our account with Allah. And so here Imam Khomeini reminds us that in the servitude of Allah, in the worship of Allah, in trying to enhance and increase our ubudiyya, we need to first and foremost settle our accounts with Allah, tell Allah what we have done good, and thank Him for gracing us and allowing us to do good, and likewise settle our accounts with Allah, tell Allah the bad things that we have done, the disobedience we have committed, and ask Allah for forgiveness, and all the while take refuge, seek protection, seek safety in remembering Allah. And of course, finally, Imam Khomeini says, don't fear any creature, and don't fear the reckoning of any creature, for the reckoning of creatures is transitory, but the reckoning before Allah is eternal. And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
There are many beautiful, beautiful promises of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for the mu'mineen and mu'minat. In order to be considered mu'min and a believer, according to the Quran, we have to have intellectual conviction that Islam is the truth. It's not a religion that I'm following because of my forefathers or anybody else. I personally am convinced this is Islam, this is the truth. In order to be considered mu'min is that, different than other faiths, it's not going to be a religion where my iman or my faith is only in my heart. The Quran specifies and teaches us that if you are mu'min in Islam, that iman is going to demonstrate itself in our actions. Islam is not a buffet. It's a package deal. Someone who is a Muslim has intellectual conviction that the Quran is the book of God, that Imam Ali is really the first imam. This person has to embrace all of Islam. Picking and choosing in Islam does not lead one to be considered mu'min, and the promises of God are not for those who are not mu'mineen. So, back to the topic. The topic is that God, the creator of the universe, has confidence in you and I. Some of us might not think of ourselves as a champion, as someone who's a game changer, but what's important is how God views us. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And by the way, sisters, this promise that I'm going to share you the verse of Quran with you, this promise that we're going to be sharing and inshallah pondering on and then taking benefit from, is a promise which means, no matter what the challenge in life I've been given, Allah has confidence in. It might be dealing with family. Sometimes people have marital issues. Sometimes their children are not doing what they would like. Sometimes their spouse, sometimes relatives. That might be one challenge. It might be a personal challenge. Sometimes someone is a mu'min or mu'mina, maybe not in this community, but it happens. Somebody's even dealing with something as like addiction, be a personal struggle that the person is going through. Sometimes it might be financial issues. You'd be surprised, inshallah, all of you are doing very well financially. Sometimes for mu'mineen and mu'minat, the struggles they're going through, they can't even explain to you and I. Sometimes people are going through financial issues. Sometimes it's a lawsuit. They look on the other side of the equation, on the other side of the table. The enemy seems so powerful. Those who are after them are so strong. But again, Allah believes in me. I can do it. I'm up to the task. It might be long-term health issues.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. سبحانه أعظم والملك لا شريك له لبيك إن الحمد لك والعز لا شريك له
with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Aperture.
Being the second largest country in the Middle East, Iran is rich with a colorful bouquet of architectural masterpieces, magnificent mosques, ancient caravanserais, impressive rock tombs, and former royal cities of the ancient Persian Empire. But perhaps Iran's amazing desert landscape has been largely overlooked. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. Iran's deserts are unique in the variety of their composition and surface types. A yardang, or kalut, as they're called in Farsi, is a topographical feature that has been carved out of a surface by the wind. They're most commonly found in deserts where there is a sand supply, which abrades the surface when moved by the wind, and soft sedimentary rocks that the sand easily erodes. Over time, the sand wears down the surface into beautiful streamlined shapes that are aligned with the prevailing sand-moving winds. Iran is famous for mega yardangs in Kerman, in the south of the country. Stay with us for this episode of Iran Trotter as we follow Javad to discover the spectacular kaluts in Iran.
To most humans, nature means trees, jungles, rivers, and mountains. But is that all there is to this beautiful nature created by the architect of all beauties? God is limitless. He is infinite and has created nature with infinite beauties. Nature has many and varied complicated aspects, and the natural world in Iran is no exception. Many people do not consider deserts and wastelands as part of nature. But the fact is, deserts constitute a large part of the environment on our planet. All we have to do is open our eyes and look at these countless, peerless beauties. Hi, I'm
Javad Gharai. I'm an Iran trotter, and I'm traveling to the most pristine areas of my beloved country and uncovering to you its many beauties. This time, I've come to a vast city in Kerman province, a city that in fact forms a major swath of the amazing landscape in Kerman. The fictitious city of Kalutz. I set out on a 110-kilometer walking journey to the northeast of Kerman province to arrive at my main destination. The Yardangs are located in an area spanning 11,000 square kilometers in the west of Iran's Lut Desert. The Yardangs of Lut cover an area around 150 kilometers long and around 70 kilometers wide. In the words of some researchers, this vast expanse used to be the bed of a lake sometime in the third geological period, and that in fact the Yardangs, or the Kalutz, are made up of brittle sediments lying at the bottom of that lake. At some point in the third geological period, the lake dried up as a result of the major climatic changes that occurred on Earth. Torrential rains and their ensuing humidity in the following periods and water erosion led to the creation of the Kalutz or Yardangs. Other researchers believe the Yardangs are the result of the alluvial deposits originating from Birjan Mountains in the distant past. Sharp temperature fluctuations in the Lut and the constant blowing of local winds carrying abrasive sediment loads of sandstones battering these Yardangs over the years have led to their erosion. Winds that continue to lash out at these Yardangs and eventually raise beautiful clay terraces to the ground. Trips to the heart of deserts and wastelands have always been risky, but studying up on such places and the risks involved in traveling to them, not to mention carrying a proper map, a GPS device, and the topographic map of the area you are traveling to, can bring the number of risks involved down to a great extent. In all fairness, one of the most beautiful areas in the Lut Desert is the Shahdad Yardangs of Kerman. I mean, there are few places in the world with such beautiful desert landscape. I think nowhere in the world can you find a landscape as vast as this one. I am in the Lut Yardangs, hoping for a good trip, and I'm positive it's gonna be a thrill. I stepped onto a part of the river that not many people were interested in traveling to for several reasons. The flight distance between the Yardangs and the Yalan Megadunes in the west of Lut is around 150 kilometers. For several consecutive years, part of the Yalan Megadunes was announced by NASA as one of the hottest spots on Earth. This is an area where temperatures run above 70 degrees in the summer. With no trace of life among them, the Yardangs of Lut look scary to human eyes. Although in recent years, some researchers have discovered and registered a number of plants and insect species in them. But at first look, the fictional town of Kalutz or Yardangs bears no trace of life of any kind. Encountering sandstorms in the desert or getting lost in them, or all the other hidden dangers of such terrains, can put your life at grave risk. But none of those reasons stop me from walking right into the Yardangs. You can enjoy spending time in this beautiful natural landscape with enough information on its climate and terrain, and by using a map and GPS device. No one has found any trace of human habitation in the Kalutz area, not in the past and not in the present eras. But on the outskirts of these beautiful Kalutz, there are many remnants of human habitation from years gone by. The Kalutz are located on the outskirts of Shahdad, a city in Kerman that is among the most ancient in Iran. A place with a more than 6,000-year-old culture and history. The world's oldest metal flag was discovered here. The many qanats and water reservoirs on the outskirts of the Kalutz, as well as the lush gardens of Shahdad, are evidence of human settlement in the distant past. Right at the beginning of the route, I came across an area with a concentration of strange Kalut formations, a place famous for its egg-shaped hills. I have to walk a long distance to get to the heart of the Shahdad Kalutz, but the beautiful elevations you see behind me, which is sort of the prelude to the main Kalutz, are called the egg-shaped hills, and for good reason. They really do look like eggs, although these hills are considered as little Kalutz. The reason they've been abraded more than the other Kalutz in this region is rainfalls and, of course, the type of soil they are made from. And if it goes on like this, rainwater and wind are going to destroy them in the not-too-distant future. Every spot you go to in this region, you see new and different Kalutz or Yardangs. The majority of those who travel to the Kalutz are not aware of the diversity of the landscapes in this terrain and its natural phenomena. But the fact is, the Kalutz of Kerman are a peerless kaleidoscope of beautiful desert landscapes. Everywhere you look in this region, you see spectacular yet peculiar sights. Around 7 kilometers after the egg-shaped hills, I arrived at another strange yet interesting scenery. From a distance, I thought I was approaching some prehistoric cemetery. But, well, this is not a cemetery. These mounds you see here are called the Dolphin Hills. In fact, they are very small kalutz in the vicinity of the big ones. The dual action of wind abrasion and rainwater has chiseled them to look like dolphins swimming on a wave of dust and sand. Every part of the kalutz in Shahdad has its own unique shape. And these Dolphin Hills are among those unique parts of the Shahdad Kalutz. These are really extraordinary, really beautiful. We'll be right back. I've been walking around in the Shahdot Kalutz for hours now, deep into the heart of these remarkable protuberances. Although it is fall now, and the best season to travel to the Lut Desert, and of course to the Shahdot Kalutz, early spring is also a good time. Anyway, it's noontime and very hot. It was very cold in the morning, but now the temperature keeps going up, so I'm going to have to take a layer off. The temperature in the desert fluctuates sharply between the morning and the evening. It's always like that. So you have to remember to pack the right clothes for summer and winter weather. That's what it's like in the desert. You get summer and winter weather at the same time, happening within hours of each other on a single day. You should keep that in mind. It's really getting hot here. I just hope it'll stop right there as we approach noontime. Because, I mean, the sun, the heat from the sun can just be unbearable. Although I've already thought of something for a situation like this, one of the most important things we have to carry with us when traveling through deserts and wastelands are glasses, sunglasses that is. They're very important to protecting your eyes against the scorching sun. When the rays of the sun reach the dirt, they are reflected in your direction and bother your eyes. The air here is very clean. That's why there's so much light. So you have to wear sunglasses if you ever come to a place like this. If you don't, your vision is going to get hurt, and you're going to get wrinkles around your eyes. And that's what the ladies are very sensitive about. The dazzling beauties of the Kalutz redoubled my enthusiasm for traveling into the heart of these sand formations. But the deeper I walked into them, the more arduous things became. Walking on the sand in the punishing heat requires strenuous effort and drains your energy. The day started out cold, but the temperatures kept going up as I approached midday. The biting autumn cold was nowhere to be felt. Walking on the sand and grit really wears you out after a while. And it makes you sweat a lot, too. It's starting to get really hot. I better change into something more suitable. I'm wearing a thin layer, but the short sleeves expose my forearms to the sun, and that means sunburn. The sun is just bearing down on me. I feel like it's burning my face. I mean, I really had to change my clothes to avoid getting sunburn on my arms. The sun can get really annoying round about noontime out in the desert, even if it's not very hot. You're bound to get sunburned. So you must wear long-sleeved shirts with good breathability at the same time. I mean, that's what I always do. And I've never run into any problems because long sleeves have always protected my arms against the sun. Now, more important than wearing long-sleeved shirts out in the desert is to have proper headgear, such as this hat. What this hat does is it prevents the radiation from the sun from reaching your head to a great extent, and as a result, your face, neck, and ears won't get burnt. It really feels good when you wear one of these. And of course, a good pair of sunglasses is a must-have in a place like this. But there is another type of glasses, sunglasses, that I carry with me all the time. These are called storm goggles by some and skiing goggles by others. It's important to pack a pair of these goggles too, because when there is a sandstorm, when strong winds start blowing, they kick up a lot of sand and other particles into the air, and the goggles prevent them from going into your eyes. More important than that, you can see where you're going when you're out in the sticks without worrying about sand getting into your eyes. Man, I'm beat. It really wears you out when you walk on sand and up and down on those little hills. It's just fatiguing. I dare say, walking about in the Kalutz area and the hot areas of Lut Desert in the summer is next to impossible. The temperatures are so high and the surface of the earth so hot, you won't last more than a few kilometers. That's a time when you cannot see any living creatures in the Lut Desert. You can only see them during the night. It's very important to carry enough water when you travel to a place like this. If you're going to spend 2, 3, or 4 days trekking in the desert, make sure you have enough water. That's because you sweat a lot and your body loses a lot of water. And obviously, when that happens, you become dehydrated. In addition to that, you have to eat food that contains salt. But if your food doesn't contain enough salt, you need to eat salty nuts. That's because your body loses a lot of sodium as you sweat in the heat, and that's going to harm your body. Okay, now let's eat an orange. The Kaluts expand intermittently from the west of the Lut Desert towards the southeast. The corridors formed among them look in the same direction as the Kaluts themselves, that is, in the direction of the local winds. They are all very brittle. The shape of each Kalut depends on how it was first formed, its density, and the direction of the winds that brush against it on their paths. Shifting winds and other erosive factors in the Kalut's basin has created a variety of them with different shapes and sizes. In some places, winds have filled the depression around the Kaluts with sand, and in other places, they have blown away the sand from around them. Now, let's take a look at the etymology of the word Kalut. Kalut is a blend of two words, Kal and Lut. Together, they mean the city of Lut. In the Khorasan region, in central Iran and along the coast of the Caspian Sea, the word Kal has taken on different meanings. In Khorasan and Sistan and Baluchistan, it's the root of words such as Kalate and Kalat, meaning castle or citadel. It could also mean a hamlet or a village perched on an elevation. In the center of Iran, the word Kalat means a walled-off village. The Kaluts are an imaginary city. From a distance, they look like the remains of a ruined city. Of course, there are a few other areas like this in some parts of the world, but the Kaluts of Iran cover the largest such area in the world. Without human interference and technology, Mother Nature has put on display her unique artistic talent and creativity. It was starting to get dark. When on a nature trip, it's important that the nature traveler find the right spot where they can pitch their tent before the dark sets in. That will ensure a good night's rest without any trouble. I'm going to call it a day now, and I think the best place for me to camp out is right here next to a lone Kalut surrounded by sand. The wind has created this hole here as if to prepare it for someone to set up their tent in. This is perfect because here I'll have my back to the wind, which usually blows from the heights of Siyuj Mountains back there towards the Kaluts. I mean, that's why this hole has been created. This Kalut hasn't allowed sand to accumulate here, hence the evenly shaped depression around it. It's just the perfect place to camp out. We're spending the night here. It's a great spot, and hopefully we're going to have a star-studded sky above us. Okay, I've been told I wouldn't be able to find any firewood or shrubs or any living creatures because deep in the heart of the Kaluts, the winds are so strong, they won't allow any vegetation to grow on their path. In other words, if a plant grows here, it gets blown away by the wind. But there is an exception to that rule, and that is an area located on the path of floodwaters flowing down to the Kaluts area from the Ravar Mountains. The floods uproot the shrubs on the banks of the rivers nearby, the ones near the Kaluts, that is, and dump them in the seasonal river that's created near here and eventually brings them over to the Kaluts area. I might be able to find something there to make a fire here tonight to keep me and others warm. The temperatures in the Lut Desert fluctuate constantly, making life a bit difficult for nature travelers. Therefore, I always pack warm clothes and a good warm sleeping bag. Another beauty of the desert is its star-studded night sky. In the absence of light pollution, you get a clear view of the twinkling stars and part of the Milky Way. You can spend hours feasting your eyes on those beautiful celestial bodies that adorn the expansive firmament above. I'm glad I found these sticks. It gets really cold out here at night. I rarely make fire during my trips because I set a lot of store by nature and even dry sticks of wood. These sticks are a form of energy. They are no different than oil and gas, so we shouldn't use them recklessly. As I say, I don't make fire when I camp out unless I really have to. Most of the time, I don't need to. And when I do, I make a small one. But in the Lut Desert and in the Shahdad Desert, temperatures fluctuate a lot. I remember coming here 3 years ago. One night, winter was about to come to an end. I mean, like 2 or 3 days to the end of the season, 3 years ago. That night, right here in the Lut Desert, the temperature plunged to -1 degrees. Here's the thing. In the day, at midday I mean, I had traveled deeper into this area and experienced temperatures as high as 43 degrees. That's a huge difference in one single day. It was all very strange to me. But well, that's what deserts are like. It's typical of them. It can get really cold during the night, especially during fall and winter. Therefore, you have to have proper clothes to wear, and if you manage to find a few sticks, you can keep yourself warm and enjoy yourself sitting around a campfire.
The light.
Animals have been providing protection and service to people since time immemorial. They have not only been the source of food like meat, butter and milk, but also saved humans by eating plants toxic to them. Authorities in New York City have taken 2 dozen goats from a nearby farm to the Riverside Park in Manhattan to munch on invasive weeds. They say it's an environmentally friendly win-win for the species removal at the park. The goats get to feast on overgrown bush, and Riverside Park Conservancy doesn't have to dump harsh chemicals on weeds. Park officials say it's both healthy for the goats and good for the environment.
As part of our woodland restoration initiative, 2 years ago, we unleashed a very hungry group of goats into a stretch of the park that had been overrun with invasive plants. And wow, did they exceed expectations. We called it Gotham because we put the goat in Gotham. They chowed down on Japanese knotweed. They noshed on porcelain berry. They snacked on multiflora rose. They easily traversed the hard-to-reach terrain behind me and gulped down poison ivy without even giving it a second thought. Since goats are naturally effective weed whackers, putting them to work in Gotham is like treating them to an all-you-can-eat buffet. It's healthy for the goats, and it's good for the environment. That's farm to table.
People visiting the goats at the zoo say these animals are emotionally intelligent and connect with people. Goats are an ingenious approach to weed removal, eating species dangerous to humans like poison ivy. Of the 24 goats, 5 will call Riverside Park its home through the end of August. For some others, the public can vote to determine which goat will be crowned the greatest of all time. The winner will be announced by the end of the summer.
Singapore unveils one of the world's biggest floating solar panel farms in a bid for quadrupling its solar energy production by 2025. The farm is as big as 45 football fields. It includes 122,000 solar panels. The panels are designed to last for 25 years, and drones will be used to assist with maintenance. The farm is located on a reservoir in western Singapore and will generate enough electricity to power its 5 water treatment plants. It puts Singapore among the few countries in the world with a water treatment system fully powered by green energy. The farm can reduce Singapore's carbon emissions by 32,000 tons annually. Floating solar panels perform up to 15% better than conventional rooftop panels. That's because of the cooling effect of water and that shading from other buildings does not affect them. Singapore is currently developing 4 other floating solar panel projects. Maybe kittens are considered the cutest baby animals by many of us, but just wait to see this baby hippo, which was born during a full moon. The male calf was born in a Mexican zoo last month. He weighs 30 kilos upon birth. Since then, he has spent most of his time bonding with his mother. The vets in the zoo say he is healthy, playful, strong, and a bit hyperactive. They say some of his habits are surprisingly similar to that of a horse or a dolphin. Generally, reproduction among zoo hippos is not a common practice. Therefore, newborn calves are signs of high quality of the lives and habitats of their parents. A zoo in central France is welcoming the birth of a male giraffe after 15 months of waiting. The calf is named after Melman, the giraffe character in the Madagascar movie franchise. He was born on Sunday in a Bouval Zoo park. He is 170 centimeters tall and weighs 55 kilograms. Zookeepers say Melman is a special baby.
A giraffe birth here. It's our second birth since we've had the group of females established for a few years. So for us, it's still quite an important and exceptional event because it's not every day that we have a giraffe birth.
The giraffe keepers say Melman stood on his feet for the first time 45 minutes after being born. Since zoos have opened in France, visitors can enjoy seeing little Melman playing around with his mother. The birth of the baby giraffe is good news for wildlife preservation, as according to estimates, the number of the animal in the wild has dropped by about 30% since the 1980s.
The issue of marine trash has long worried scientists and environmentalists. Now a French engineer has invented a robot to help clean ocean waste. The Jellyfish Bot is a remote-controlled, electric-powered boat that helps clean rubbish from the surface of the water. It's 70 centimeters long and 70 wide, almost the size of a suitcase. The robot can collect everything from plastic bottles to masks and even oil and petrol. Despite its wide-ranging utility, Jellyfish Bot has a rather simple mechanism.
To collect trash, you have to do something as simple as possible, because otherwise, if we put too complicated mechanisms, it can get blocked and things can get stuck in the system. We designed the robot with a slide mechanism that goes towards a net, so we fill up the net, we take back the net, and that's the end of it.
The trash-collecting robot is being used at around 15 ports in France, lightening the workload of local cleaners. It has also been exported to countries including Japan, Norway, and Singapore. The makers have also developed an autonomous version of the boat.
Malaysians at a vaccination center in the city of Kuching have witnessed a surprising scene. A T-Rex turned up to get his COVID-19 jab. Fitness instructor Kenny Sia dressed up in a dinosaur costume to amuse people, doesn't he look fabulous, and protect himself. Sia said he made the decision to lift up the spirits of frontline health workers is exhausted by vaccinating over 5,000 people a day. People rushed to take pictures with him, hailing his appearance and historic and funny. A giant 3D cat has risen to fame in the Japanese capital, Tokyo, bringing joy to citizens amid the COVID-19 pandemic. A massive billboard featuring the cat has been installed in one of Tokyo's busiest districts. The realistic-looking cat on a 4K resolution screen appears every few minutes between advertisements. Depending on the time of day, the cat appears differently and sometimes meowing at people walking by. The companies that set up the billboard hope that they can cheer people up during the dark era of the coronavirus pandemic. The display has already caused a frenzy in the city and among the social platforms, with many expressing joy and amazement at the technology.
Peru is full of natural wonders worthy of appreciation in each of its regions. A zoo in the capital Lima has now unveiled an incredibly cute and adorable Andean alpaca calf to attract visitors amid dwindling zoo-goers due to the coronavirus pandemic. This furry baby alpaca named Paquita is just 1 month old and was introduced to the public on the eve of the 200th anniversary of Peru's independence from Spain. The zoo has also displayed its families of llamas, alpaca, and vicuña. The three are members of South American camelids biological family and are traditionally valued for their soft and warm wool. They live in the Andes Mountains, which lay thousands of meters above sea level. Peruvians are proud of the history of wools associated with these species, which have common ancestors with camels.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Four German tightrope walkers have set a new world highlining distance record by crossing an Arctic valley in Sweden. The group tiptoed a distance of more than 2 kilometers between two mountain peaks in Lapland barefoot. The line they walked on was set at a height of 600 meters. The four members of the team walked the line one after another successfully, despite challenges including the wind and long distance. It took 2 days for the team to rig the line between the two peaks.
A herd of elephants migrating in China have been making headlines for months. Now they have once again attracted attention. Experts monitoring the animals this week noticed two females engaged in a dramatic fight over the herd's leadership, where they kicked and bit each other. The tussle soon ended after a male elephant succeeded in calming the belligerent giants. The fight happened in China's southwestern province of Yunnan. The herd embarked on a lengthy journey last year after escaping a nature reserve and has since trekked hundreds of miles. The elephant's migration is the longest one in China's history. A distinctive feature, no matter of humans or animals, often catches our attention. You might have heard stories about the big fat cow or other animals you love the most. Here we bring you a story about a cow for her not being big, but for being the smallest. Rani, a 23-month-old cow, is being reared on a farm near the Bangladeshi capital, Dhaka. She is only 20 inches tall and weighs 26 kilograms. Local vets say the little Rani has no physical problems but will no longer gain any weight or height. The owner believes Rani is shorter than the smallest cow in Guinness World Record. The record for the smallest cow so far held by a 4-year-old red cow named Manikyam from the Indian state of Kerala.
We found on the internet that the smallest known cow is living in India's Kerala, which weighs 40 kilograms. but ours weighs only 26, so we believe ours is the world's smallest. That's why we applied to the Guinness World Records. They replied to us saying they will investigate within 90 days.
The tiny cow has also caused tourist frenzy in the South Asian country as thousands are flocking to Dhaka to take a glance despite coronavirus restrictions. The owner says only over 15,000 people come to visit her in just 3 days. The dwarf cow has also gone viral on social media. A nearly 22-meter-high sand sculpture in Denmark has set a new Guinness record as the world's tallest sand castle. The sculpture has been constructed with nearly 5 tons of sand. It's made in the shape of a triangle, and a wood structure stabilizes it. More than 30 artists from different countries have worked on the project, carving intricate details on the castle's wall. Its makers say a nod to the coronavirus pandemic was also made at the top of that construction. They say that's because the virus has controlled the lives of people over the past months. The sand piece broke the previous Guinness record that belonged to an 18-meter-high sand castle in Germany. An adorable baby elephant has become a web celebrity after she was caught on camera using a muddy hill as playground slide. Footage shows the little elephant excitedly approaching a hill with a smooth path leading downward. The baby then goes on all fours to have the time of her life sliding on her belly down the hill, taking full advantage of rain. The toddler, named Yishong, is only 3 years old. She lives at a rescue center in China, one of the major habitats for wild Asian elephants in the country.
A French company has taken the process of pizza making to a whole new level by creating a robot chef. The robot named Patsy is completely autonomous. The machine, now working in a pizzeria in Paris, is capable of taking orders, making a pizza from scratch and serving it. Having three arms, the robot can make 120 pizzas in an hour, which is 13 times faster than a human chef.
We are in a very fast process with a perfect control of time and quality, since we have a constancy offered by robotics and then an environment that is quite cool and relaxed. The idea is also to spend a few pleasant minutes washing the robot while you wait for your pizza to be made.
It took designers 8 years to develop the machine, which is claimed to be the first pizza-making robot in the world. They hope to use the technology to open robotics-run restaurants that can function round the clock. In China, scientists are happy that the world's first artificially bred leaf monkey is doing well 2.5 months after being born. The rare monkey was born at a research and protection center in Wuzhou City in April. Its birth took place several days earlier than the due date, and the baby was relatively weak at birth. However, thanks to his parents and caretakers, it has grown in a normal way. Scientists say the baby monkey is now in a good condition and its behavior is totally normal.
It is very important in terms of the cytic value. It has been growing up normally. In addition, we have found that it has a curiosity about the world and always shows some exploratory and learning behaviors. In general, it is in very good physical condition.
The center's scientists say another leaf monkey that was born in April is doing well too. These monkeys are the 8th generation of leaf monkeys that have been bred in captivity. Their successful births have raised hope amongst the scientists of saving a species that is one of China's most endangered wild animals.
www.parstoday.com/en.